This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. Welcome to the Humboldt Chronicles. It's made possible by Archaeological Research and Supply, the Humboldt Cure, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, and Papa and Barkley. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you. Well, here we are, almost 2 months into California's legalization of commercial and recreational marijuana. Different locations are reacting to it in different ways. Some are embracing it, going full bore into it, while others are saying thanks, but no thanks. We're going to survey our area and some other places around the state as well, and we'll also be taking your calls a little bit later at 707-786-5946. You can also email us questions and comments at studio@humboldtchronicles.com, and you can watch right now on Facebook Live, facebook.com/thehumcron. We're also going to be talking with Rob Homeland of the city of Eureka. Also, we will take a trip down to Calaveras County, of all places, which said yes, but then said no to commercial pot, and that has made for a bit of a culture war there. We'll be hearing from them. Here in the studio, we're going to be talking with Kim Kemp, longtime Southern Humboldt resident and blogger, and Kevin Jodry of Wonderland Nursery in Redway. Kim and Kevin, thank you very much for being here. It's good to see you guys. Thanks for coming up here to talk with us. First of all, bring us up to date on what's going on in Soham. I know there is some retail that's going on there. We also know about all of the expertise that's in Soham. Tell me about retail in Southern Humboldt right now.
Let's see. You have a there's a I know Toph just got a Chris. He picked up a dispensary permit over at Bembo. So his location there got, I think, a manufacturing, maybe distribution and dispensary. Then I think Karen Wagner, she has a shop over by Napa, and so she's got a nice little spot right there. We are ready to open up. We have the state license on the new spot at the One Log in Piercy. So the One Log in Piercy, we have a new store going in there. I still have the old store in Garberville. We just don't have the state license on it yet. That hasn't come in, so we're still
but
running.
Things are moving forward.
Yeah, they're
so
all moving forward. And a lot of people, the permits are moving. What people don't realize is that when you put 2,000 permits in a queue, they don't move through that fast.
Yeah, it takes a while.
And so, you know, it's just you have to be patient with a lot of this. And the problem is it's hard to be patient when you're trying to get your capital to come back.
Yeah. Kim, you have been in Soham for a long time, and you know that area as well as anybody, as far as I know. People have talked about legalization forever. How is Soham reacting to this? What's your take on whether people are glad about this? They're embracing it? Are they a little uneasy about it and unsure about the future?
I think uneasy would be a little shy of what the actuality is. I think there's fear on both the ones who chose to stay in the underground market and in the people who are trying to move forward. And what I'm seeing, sadly, is a real split in neighborhoods between ones who went one way and ones who went another.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit later. I was curious about that. I haven't heard a whole lot about what was going on, and that actually was an alarm bell for me. Because I thought, I wonder what they're thinking if I'm not hearing as much as I usually hear from folks down there. So there is a little bit of, we're not sure what the future is yet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Last week, producer Larry Trask asked the city of Eureka about implementation of Prop 64 there. And he talked to Director of Development Services, Rob Homeland. Here's what he had to say.
In reality, the demand for retail is not nearly as high as the demand for transportation, distribution, and manufacturing. Because that's what's really needed in our region when it comes to the amount of product that's produced here. It couldn't possibly all be consumed here. And so right now, Humboldt County is tied in the state as the second largest producer of organic agriculture. Yet we're like 37th in the total amount of agriculture. But we couldn't possibly eat all of that organic agriculture. Right, so it's not like we have 37 grocery stores in Eureka because we have so much organic agriculture here. Mm-hmm. So the same thing is true of cannabis. The majority of our businesses are going to be manufacturing, even though in people's perception, retail is the first thing they think of.
All right, Kim and Kevin. So he's saying that, and of course, we're just 2 months into this, so that's not a big sample size, but what they're seeing so far is that given the population size here, of course, which has a lot to do with demand, it looks like the future might be around here, manufacturing, processing, and transportation. Is that good info for opportunity for people in Southern Humboldt?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta remember that there's a huge amount of different permits that one can acquire.
Right.
And so for a lot of people that are in the cannabis industry, they weren't growers. They were distributors. Mm-hmm. They used to call them different names, but Basically you're a distributor. And so the ability to distribute product is still needed, because most of these companies that are coming in as distribution companies, what they have is some paperwork and a license, but they've never sold a single drop of cannabis in their lives. So their ability to actually traffic your product from your farm to a storefront at some form that pays you in a velocity return that lets you stay capitalized, I'm just not really seeing it. So I think there's an incredible need for people to be involved in the distribution of cannabis correctly, because we already produce so much. And for a lot of individuals, the ability to self-distribute was crucial. So if you're micro, you can do your own distribution if you tie it into a multi-permit. But, yeah, well, he's completely correct. We don't have the population size to support tremendous numbers of stores. And if you have a store and you don't have it in a location that makes sense, it's still going to be an issue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no guarantee. This is business like any business. But what he's saying is that manufacturing is needed because and the reason why those are needed also is because you have to have infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You can't just manufacture off your property. You have to have specific types of zoning, and you have to have specific type of structures. And so a lot of that is economically prohibitive to people to get into. And so for distribution, it's kind of similar, where you can become a distributor, but you have to be capitalized enough to be able to cover the cost of the taxes on the products that you're purchasing. So you can't be poor and be a distributor, and you can't be just a small mom and pop and have a manufacturing situation unless you happen to own commercial industrial property that allowed you to do manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So there's need for permits that exist in those genres, but a lot of it is financially, can you get it?
Right. Kim, do you hear talk among folks in Soham about, hey, you know what, there is a way we could stay here. We could get into transportation from here to the Bay Area or Sacramento, or we could get into the processing of what's been grown or things like that. Are they talking about ideas like that?
There are some really interesting ideas out there. I actually just talked to a guy today who's working to put growers and trimmers together in sort of a Facebook situation. Very interesting. So there are people who are doing that, but you have to remember that most people who are growers, which is the basis of where the most of the money came from here, even though there were distributors and other things, but the biggest portion of the money came from growers. They were farmers, and it's a hard thing to make that switch.
That was going to be my follow-up question. You beat me to it. How do they make that transition? As Kevin was saying, it's a little bit of infrastructure, but it's also mental, too. They have to start thinking in a different way. Is that right? Is that going to happen?
It is a hard thing, but I am hearing people, as they've overcome obstacles, say, well, I did that, and I thought I couldn't do that. They told me I had to have a separate trim room. Oh, my God. I threw a big fit, and then, okay, now I have a separate trim room. Okay, no big deal. And it's each thing as they're coming across it. I'm starting to see that mentality come to the forefront as the county is reaching out to people and saying, okay, you're telling us you have problems, and we're adjusting for your issues. Then people feel hope.
So the county is reaching out to help?
I would think that would be a little strong, but people are feeling like when they go in concert and talk to the county is hearing
it's okay.
Kevin, would you say that's true?
Yeah, no. My dealings with the county have been outstanding, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And they've been very professional about how it's been done. And that's really all you can ask, is that they do what they're supposed to do. And I think that they're trying to take a look at the situation, try to understand how do you work with the inhabitants of your county so that this way you don't cripple an industry. And, the people are getting a chance to be heard, and hopefully some resolution occurs in terms of a reasonable working situation that allows us all to move forward. But, I mean, compared to a lot of counties in California, we're treated really pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, my God, I speak all over the state. And, we look like we're the most educated, elevated group of people in the state sometimes. And for me to say that about Humboldt County, because we're all living in the woods for so long, it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Well, a lot has been made leading up to this point where we are right now about the level of expertise in this county. We know it exists. We all know that. It seems clear that the early results of this legalization experiment in California are confirming that Humboldt is good, very good at producing top quality product, and entrepreneurs around here should pay attention to that and not focus solely on the retail side. Once again, here's Rob Holmlin.
Most people, when they want to talk about cannabis and commercial businesses, they think of retail, they think of dispensaries. Right now in Eureka, we have 58 applicants, 58 different businesses that want to run some sort of commercial cannabis facility. Only one of those 58 is a retail or dispensary store. So while most people immediately think of dispensaries, it's really not turning out to be the case. The majority of our businesses are manufacturers. So you've got thousands of outdoor farms in Humboldt County. Those farms need to get their product to dispensaries by law, right? It's the only way you can legally sell it. The majority of the population in the state, and therefore the majority of the dispensaries, are going to be in the Bay Area and the LA area. So if the farms are to get their product to the market, they're going to be sending most of their product to the south. So Eureka is now becoming a retail or a manufacturing hub for all of those farms so that their product can get packaged or turned into edibles or turned into vape pens or turned into lotions and then distributed down to the rest of the state. And so we're not going to see that much retail activity in Eureka compared to the other types of businesses.
So here's the question, Kim and Kevin. For right now, what's the best advice based on what we're hearing from the experience in places like Eureka and around the county and surrounding counties? What's the best advice for local marijuana-related business in southern Humboldt right now based on what's been going on in this region?
Get a good accountant and have them take a look at your liquidity and make sure that you are absolutely solvent enough to proceed with your plan. Because otherwise, you're about to walk halfway into something and find yourself bankrupt. And then you get to hear this word, angel investor. I love that word. It sounds like they're going to come in and grant you free money. Investor money is like 35 cents on the dollar right now. And I know some investors that are coming in at 50 if you're desperate. And so you just gave up half of your company, 35% of your company, because you got yourself into a financial problem. And so before anybody goes any further than anything, you have to have your accountant take a look at what you're doing and give you an honest mathematical picture. Don't trust your consultants, because their job is to tell you how to proceed, not should you proceed. Different.
Yeah.
Very different. How to and should you are two different animals. And so to me, financially, I think people need to look at this from the reality of, do you have enough money? And are you in a situation that makes sense over time? And your accountant can look at that and say, look, your numbers don't match.
What would you say the number of folks you know who have had investors from outside come in to help them out in the way you were just talking about?
Oh, gosh, everybody but small people. Yeah, this is the first time in modern business history that you've had this much capital available to create an industry.
Right.
And so you have probably $1 trillion, literally $1 trillion in tech money sitting. And so you have this bombardment of tech capital coming in, and then you got all the capital coming from Canada coming in, and they are sucking up stuff everywhere because they can actually get loans from the banks in Canada because it's a traded item. So the Canadians are at a whole nother level with their ability to purchase and buy.
So in southern Humboldt, you're seeing investment money from Silicon Valley and Canada?
Coming in. Oh, yeah, guaranteed. Everybody's grabbing investment money because it's almost impossible to put together a package that's adequate to compete at the level needed. It's called economy of scale. And so if I want to build cars and I want to compete with Chevy, I have to have a facility that can compete with Chevy.
Right.
And if I don't, I can't compete.
Right.
And so in order to compete at this level, you have to be able to put together this entire package. And the package means storefront or farm that has all the permits, that has all the pieces. And that is really difficult for a lot of the farmers right now because so many people don't realize that over the last 10 years, the money disappeared from cannabis. Cannabis wasn't like $5,000 yesterday, and then today it's not here, and we're all looking at like, what'd we do with all the money? It left 10 years ago. It was 2007 was the last good year, and it was like 38 then, right? And so we're talking 10 years, 11 right. years ago was the last good prices. And so in that massive decapitalization that occurred over the last decade, it financially took a tremendous amount of resources out of all these farmers. And all these people that kept talking about they're going bigger and bigger is because their margin kept going smaller and smaller. So what you had happen was a decapitalization of most of the players in the local game. And it put a lot of people into situations where we fully understand what's needed and we know what we're doing, but we don't happen to have a couple million dollars sitting handily just
and
to
go. And you can't go to a bank.
And you can't go to a bank. You, no bank.
Banking is a huge issue in this right now all over the country, in every state that is mm-hmm. doing this experiment. Kim, how receptive are people in Southern Humboldt to this, to outside money coming in? I mean, in some cases, you just don't have a choice, right?
Well, I think that you're talking two different levels. What Kevin's talking about are the big boys, mm-hmm. and then most of the people that I talk to are the small farmers, the mom and pops.
And what are they doing?
And they don't get any outside capital. Nobody's investing in them.
How are they making it?
Or
are they?
Not so well. Mm-hmm. Not so well. It's tough. There's a feeling of real fear. And you can see it in the businesses in Southern Humboldt who are, one of the gas companies was saying their business was down 30%, and that's the lowest I've heard. But it's obviously not, that's a business that I think people in Eureka could understand is not directly tied to marijuana, but it's obviously feeling the effects of
it rippled. And yes. For as long as anybody can remember, it has rippled through the whole economy in this county, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in one way or another. We're gonna continue with that in just a few minutes. We're just getting started here. A little bit later, we're going to be including your calls and comments. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. As we go into a break, a cultivator minute from Mark Oliver. He's general manager of Eel River Hydroponics. He has some advice about what a cultivator needs to be thinking about now as we head toward the growing season.
The main thing that I would focus on would be the medium that you're going to grow in, and whether that is re-amending the soil, putting some sort of mycostop, fungicide, insecticide in there so it can colonize, and just really prepare for the season so you can start ahead of the curve. An ounce of prevention creates pounds of success. You know, truthfully, in a greenhouse situation, with everything being, you know, in tight proximity to each other, for me, it'd be fungicides and molds, powder molds, and that kind of stuff is what I actually be worried about. So, you know, you got to have a lot of good air circulation, everything moving in there. That's why I think it's important to use something, whether it's mycostop, actinivate, some sort of organism that colonizes in your soil and maintains that soil free of pests. Not a chemical necessarily at all, but like a microorganism I'm talking about, you know, whether it be a streptomyces, a streptolyticus, or some sort of strain for pests. So if we're re-amending, you definitely want to re-amend heavily in those beds. The standards, the old originals, nitrobats, some potassium, some bloom, a little bit of everything, trace minerals, macronutrients. You want a little bit of everything in re-amended dirt. New dirt, like I said, it's going to come with most everything that you need to get the plant started off in the right direction. But again, none of that stuff comes with any sort of fungicides or insecticide safeties. My name is Mark Oliver. I'm the general manager down here at Eel River Hydroponics. If you ever need any advice, knowledge, nutrients, whatever it may be, we're here for you to get your garden to grow like mad from the roots to the fruits.
We have the best music. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. Continuing our conversation now with Kim Kemp and Kevin Jodry. Join us here in the studio from Southern Humboldt. Guys, I'd like to get your reaction to and thoughts on some of the priorities that we're hearing from local leaders. Here again is Rob Homeland. If you're just joining us, he is the Director of Development Services for the City of Eureka.
Overall, I can say that from what I've heard from council members in public meetings is that some of them want to promote Eureka as a tourist destination for cannabis. Others don't want to quite go that far. Some want to minimize regulations and generally say if that's what the people want and that's what the people of California voted for, then we should find a way to safely allow that to happen. Council has also been, our current council and previous councils have also been really clear that they want deep involvement from the police and fire departments and the building department to make sure that everything is done safely. So if we have volatile manufacturing, then it's done in a way that is as safe as possible. So for instance, we have the Chevron bulk fuel terminal where big ships come in and pump oil into a big facility. Very dangerous place. The fire department there goes there regularly. They know where all the fire hydrants are. They know where the most dangerous things are. They practice there so that if a big emergency happens at the bulk fuel terminal, they know what to do. So the fire department's involved in everything we do with cannabis. In case there's a fire, they've been inside every business. They approve everything that is operating. We do regular inspections. Our code enforcement works with all of our applicants regularly so that That would be, I say, is council's number one priority, is that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it in a really safe and well-regulated way. Another priority of council has been to make sure that the police department is aware of everything, and that there's no black market underground things being filtered through our businesses. So we have a track and trace software program that looks at everyone's inventory and how much they're selling and how much they're getting in, and we have random inspections for that as well. So everything has to be above the board, and that I'd say would be the third priority from city council, is that they want to eliminate the black market. And if we're going to have cannabis in our community, then we're going to do it in a way that's regulated and legal, and not a way that's unregulated. So no more butane hash labs and apartment complexes.
Back now in the studio with Kim and Kevin. And what I wanted to ask you guys about there, Rob mentioned in that clip that we just heard the idea of tourism in this area. And it's been talked about a lot. I had not heard a whole lot about it from folks in Southern Humboldt until you guys got here, and before the show, we were talking about it. So tell me how the idea, just things like the Mateel, for example, or festivals, or anything else that's going on in Southern Humboldt, how might that be folded in to success in the Prop 64 era for Southern Humboldt, the idea of tourism?
Well, Humboldt County is historically a tourist destination, regardless cannabis or not. And cannabis added to that creates an incredible attraction, especially in the fact that the majority of individuals have not seen cannabis cultivated in its natural form. Mm. And so due to the fact that you can have six plants in your yard, but there's a tremendous amount of possibility for people to be able, anybody can have six plants and you can have an ounce. So you can't sell it to anybody, but you can share it. And you can show someone your six plants. And so if the majority of people that travel around, they are not canna knowledgeable, and the ability to see some cannabis on the vine would be a really interesting experience. And the ability to see some farms or processing centers or nurseries or storefronts is also awesome. But the fact that you bring them into Humboldt and you allow them to start to see the county, and the fact that the cultivators aren't so guarded about having strangers in their lives, it allows people, I think, for the first time to ever really see the beauty of Humboldt County in a private, intimate way, because we're so heavily privately owned. Mm-hmm. So Humboldt, unlike any other county in California, has this incredibly inverse relationship between private ownership and public ownership, meaning federal-owned, state-owned land. So Humboldt has this unbelievable amount of private ownership. And so the majority of individuals know 101, and they know driving through Eureka, right, and they know the Ave of the Giants. But they've never really got a chance to go inland in the interior and see a lot of the intimate places that make Humboldt so beautiful. And I think that's the big part of it, is that it's not that you're just trying to show them weed and sell them weed and push weed on them, because that's like saying alcohol tourism is the same thing. We want to get them drunk. We want to have them leave with a six-pack. No, you want to be able to have them enjoy their experience here, and if consuming alcohol is part of that experience, then that's wonderful. But the fact is, a lot of people go to breweries who don't drink just so they can see how the products are made. And I think that Humboldt, especially with the beautiful boardwalk and the zoo's putting in the new skywalk, we're doing a museum in Southern Humboldt at the
I was going to ask you about that, because when you got it was the first time I heard about that. You guys tell me about that. What's the idea there?
The idea there is to put in a Humboldt County History Museum that really focuses on what is Humboldt County. Humboldt County is such a unique place geographically speaking, because of the way the two Teutonic plates push on it and how it drives this into this accordion-like shape, which creates an unbelievable amount of microclimate. And then you have a history of mega salmon migrating upstream, dying, leaving waste, which created the ability for massive size plants and animals to grow. So Humboldt really was this Paul Bunyan-like place. And you want people to be able to understand that. And you want them to understand the Native Americans that were here for a long time who lived here. And then you want to talk about the Chinese that helped build the region. And you talk about all the stuff that occurred here, which was basically colonialism of assets being taken, mm-hmm. funds being taken, and the people being basically undertreated.
And then you get to the 60s
and 70s.
You get
to 68, and you get into that back-to-land movement, right, when you had people who wanted to take over all these tore-up places and do something that was beautiful with them just to have a better life. And then the cannabis industry sprang from that almost as an afterthought.
Where would this museum? Where would this be, Kim? Where are we talking about here?
You mean the museum?
Yeah.
It's Kevin, so let him tell you about that.
Oh, that's over at the One Log in Piercy. So okay. The One Log in Piercy, I have a new dispensary there, and we have a new nursery, too. But we want to put the museum in because it's got such a phenomenal location. We already get a tremendous number of people at the One Log itself.
What stage is it? Is it still an idea, or is this moving forward?
It's moving forward. The architects are drawing it up right now. I got to take a look at a bunch of the initial plans last night. I've been able to speak to, I spoke to Kim about it, trying to find how do we get locals who can help us fill the story in correctly.
Right.
So that what it does is it allows the region to look good, and it shows the good and the bad of what happens from industry, because logging was a good and a bad, fishing was a good and a bad, cattle good and a bad, gold good and a bad, cannabis good and a bad. It always has a balance.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to tell that whole story?
Yeah. Because
any idea when something like that might open?
Oh, in the next couple months.
Really?
Yeah, this is going to move.
That soon.
Yeah. We're not screwing around on this one.
When Kevin's involved in things, they just...
You know him better than I do, so you tell me, is that... we rely on that? Couple of months?
It seems optimistic, but when Kevin does things, he does make them move.
All right. Well, implementing change like this, especially in a state the size of California, never easy. Lots of counties around the state are having similar discussions to the one we're having right here. Right now, we're going to take a trip down to Calaveras County, and so that you don't have to run Google and remind yourself exactly where it is, it's a little bit southeast of Sacramento, a little bit east-northeast of Stockton over there. And here's what's going on. The Calaveras County Board of Supervisors originally voted to go along with most of what Prop 64 allows, including commercial grows and including retail sales. But wait, there was an election after that, and a new board of supervisors completely reversed course. Growers and retailers had already started getting ready for the January 1st start time. So what to do? You have meetings and discussions, which, as you're going to hear, became a little heated, but also very entertaining.
Guard dogs, pit bulls running loose. We've had DAs dealing with 9 homicides right now.
That's Bill McManus of the Calaveras County Committee to Ban Commercial Cultivation, talking with KPIX.
We've had 5 wildland fires caused by pot grows.
Responding to that, Calaveras County cannabis farmers, who invested lots of money to comply with the new laws, say that a ban will just make the county a haven for the black market and drive legal business elsewhere.
Next speaker, please.
Some of those farmers showed up at a recent Calaveras County Board of Supervisors meeting to get their point across, sometimes in creative ways.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. Going down to my garden feeling sad. Well, I'm going down to my garden feeling bad. I'm going down to my garden feeling mad, oh Lord. And I ain't gonna be treated this way. The county wants to stop me from growing pot, 'cause I live on a 5-acre plot. They think I'm able to move, but I'm not, oh Lord. Treated this way.
Disagreements like this are not surprising. Proposition 64 allows for significant local flexibility on the part of cities and counties as to what they will or won't permit. This is Patrick Murphy of the Public Policy Institute of California in San Francisco.
We have Proposition 64 specifically said, locals get the decision on this. So the local level is certainly where the action is taking place, and in an awful lot of variation across the state. Not surprisingly, we're California. One size hardly ever fits all.
To be sure, Calaveras County is not the only locale where there's been bickering around Proposition 64, but it might be among the most vocal.
We've seen entire communities destroyed. The way of life, the environmental damage, generators running 24/7, the stench of pot growing in the summertime.
It's a smell you'll become accustomed to. Didn't like it, but now I do. It's true. And it's only smelly for 3 months or 2. We ain't gonna be treated this way.
All right. Kevin and Kim, true or false, if you didn't know that was Calaveras County, could that be Humboldt?
Yeah.
You wouldn't even question it, would you? Of course, that sounds like Humboldt.
Well, every guy, I travel around the state, and what you learn, though, is, Humboldt has, the highest concentration of, career practitioners of the cannabis mm. ways. But man, the whole state it's is filled with these little tiny pockets of cultivators, and the brutal truth is, man, they're all getting beat up.
Well, that's just
brutalized.
That's one of the things I want to ask you after that Calaveras County story. There is probably not the same kind of culture clash in Soham, but do you hear any of that in Southern Humboldt or not?
The culture clash, I would feel, is more between Soham and Northern Humboldt.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
Not to say that there aren't pockets of no-hum in Soham, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah.
But mostly, Southern Humboldt is very understanding that economically, whether or not you actually grow pot or even totally approve of it, mm-hmm. it is the economic backbone of Southern Humboldt, and frankly, it's the economic backbone of all of Humboldt County. But a lot of people in other areas don't understand that, and they are about to feel that ripple effect that Southern Humboldt is seeing so clearly right now.
So you think the what Southern Humboldt is feeling now is going to ripple out even further into neighboring counties, Mendocino and Trinity as well?
It's already happening in Northern Mendo. Uh-huh. The same issues are happening there. Willits, for instance, has mm-hmm. Is mm-hmm. talking about I can't remember. Somebody gave me some specifics on what the Safeway was experiencing, but it was money.
In Willits.
Yes, yeah. Was having some definite financial issues.
They dropped 40% just off the bypass. I mean, I talked to some restaurant owners, Willits. It was almost 39 to 40% from the bypass shifting. So once you took the traffic out of the area, see the problem with a lot of the black market stuff or whatever we want to call it is.
Well, that's just go ahead.
A lot of these smaller guys that were able to what they did is they filled the demand for all the dispensaries, and so all these dispensaries were taking 2 or 3 units at a time, and so all these people that had little 2, 3, 4, 5 lighters were able to actually make a pretty decent living, providing good quality cannabis and clean too. Nothing shady, just illicit. And the problem is those stores can no longer purchase,
right.
And then now you can't be a delivery service and get around that. Weed Maps won't let you advertise in a minute because Leafly just cut you off. You're seeing changes in the legality of how one deals with any of these non-permitted entities. You can't even advertise without having your permit number put next to your name. And so all of a sudden, it makes it impossible for all these small people to really find a sales point. They're not really in the black market. Black market's a really different cat.
Mm-hmm.
People don't catch it. You haven't been in the black market in a long time. You've been in this weird quasi-gray market, which means you can use Facebook and Instagram to sell your product. But if you did that back in the day when it was the real black market, you would have got hauled to prison.
Well, let me follow up on that.
Yeah.
In one of our recent shows, we tried to learn from the experience of Colorado. So we talked with a guy in Denver, Mason Tvert, who was one of the ones who led the legalization movement in Colorado. And we talked with him about all of these same issues. And when we got to the black market, one of the things that he mentioned that was going on in Colorado was that, yes, and they're a couple of years ahead of us, that, yes, there still is somewhat of a black market there, but it's mostly geared for out-of-state shipments. Is that what you hear in Southern Humboldt? First of all,
now,
yes,
it's always been that way. Let's be clear. Black market has always, I mean, California's breadbasket and the cannabis basket of the United States. And Humboldt was the center of it.
Is it still going full bore the way that we're used to thinking about it?
Well, yes, as in the most people, even people who are trying to transition into the white market, are still trying to make enough money to, I mean, they have to pay their consultants and their permits and everything, and how they're doing it is selling to the guy who comes from New York and he'll take a hundi for $500 a pound.
And so that's still happening.
Oh yeah.
Well, it'll never stop. It's all industries that have tax have a black market that goes along with it. It's just that what you're seeing is a decrease in the participation total. So I don't see anybody increasing their black market operations. Like, this isn't the year where everybody's going to put an extra greenhouse in.
Right, right, right.
And so you're seeing changes in velocity of how fast things move through the system, what moves through the system, and where it's moving through the system. But when you heavily tax any industry, you create a really good cash incentive to not
black
participate.
Market it.
Yeah.
our guests are going to be staying with us, and we're going to take a look down the road with them. Plus, next, we're going to add your calls to the discussion or emails if you'd like to weigh in on this. You can reach us at 707-786-5946, 786-5946, or shoot us an email at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. Before a break, though, a cannabis calendar minute if you're in the cannabis industry or just interested in it. Here are a few events going on soon that you might like to know about.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Cannabis Calendar, brought to you by the Humboldt Chronicles. The calendar features information on upcoming cannabis-related conferences and events that take place within a day's drive of Humboldt County. Aimed at growers, the Cannabis Cultivation Congress takes place March 12th through March 14th in Oakland. According to its website, the Congress is designed by cultivators for cultivators to address the biggest challenges and opportunities you face and help you anticipate coming market shifts and trends. More information is available at CannabisCultivationConference.com. If investing in the cannabis industry or attracting investment is of interest to you, you'll want to know about the CNVest Venture Fair. Targeted at the investment community, this event takes place Monday, April 9th at the San Jose Hilton. Check out their website, canawire.co/CNVest, for more information. Also in San Jose, at the Convention Center, April 10th and 11th, the Terpenes and Testing World Conference takes place. This conference focuses on extraction, testing, and cultivation and offers panel discussions, breakout sessions, and networking activities. Find out more at terpenesandtesting.com. If you'd like to have your event listed on the cannabis calendar, email us the details at studio@humboldtchronicles.com.
Listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Here in the studio with us are Kim Kemp, Southern Humboldt resident and blogger, Redheaded Black Belt, I believe is the correct name of the blog. Also, Kevin Jodry of Wonderland Nursery. Thank you guys again. Also, if you have a comment or a question, feel free to call us at 707-786-5946 or send us an email at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. With the few minutes that we have left here, I want to ask you guys about looking into kind of the fuzzy future of cannabis in this area, Humboldt County, and actually this whole region. And I'm curious about kids who may have grown up in this business before legalization, before before Prop 64, where it might have been assumed or thought that those kids would have a family business to move into, and now with legalization and expenses for permits and things like that, what are you hearing from kids? Are they excited about this? Are they nervous about it? What do you hear, Kim? What do we think about the kids going forward here?
I think you have to remember there's just as many different types of kids as there's different types of growers, as there's different kinds of doctors. There's different people with
families.
Different personalities.
Right. Yeah.
The ones who come from damaged home life and damaged problems, they have to figure their way out of them, and it's harder for them. And then there's the driven ones who have passions to do whatever their passion is.
Right.
They'll figure out a way. And then there's what I think is the strength of Southern Humboldt are some really strong families. The people worked from their homes, just like farmers
right.
in Iowa did.
Right.
And they spent a lot of time with their kids and a lot of energy on their kids. There's a lot of small schools where mm-hmm. they built the dream world for their kids to have these lovely experiences that aren't just academic, but about growing your soul. If you allow me to get a little Southern Humboldty,
and real life experiences.
Yeah, and learn to care about other people, and the families will work together to. Whereas it might be in other parts of the world, you shove your 18-year-old out the door and say, go.
Mm-hmm. Sink or swim.
Yeah, but I think in Southern Humboldt, there's a lot more of a, okay, well, mom and dad's going to help this way, and we're going to help aunt's going to help you that way, and how are we going to make the land payment next month? We're all going to pitch in together. I think that there's a more of a everybody grabbing hands and trying to figure out how to make it work.
Am I right or wrong in saying that what I think I hear is that maybe some of these kids are almost embracing this change and going for it and saying, okay, look, this is a path. I see it.
I think Kevin would be the one to talk to the kids who are really passionate about it.
Is that right or wrong, Kevin?
No, that's it's correct.
Entrepreneurs in the making?
Yeah, entrepreneurial, but they also, you know, the difference between the young kids and like I'm in my 50s, right? And so I caught a case in 83. And so I was way prior to 215. But all these other kids, they really began their cannabis careers post 215, which means that they never had to go through a lot of the same stigma and the same trepidation. And what that did is that gave them a different feel about exposing themselves.
Yeah.
And so they're able to make the transition a lot easier and quicker than people my age group.
Interesting. Yeah.
And we rightfully should be nervous because we got to experience some good persecution. But the younger kids didn't necessarily have to deal with it to the same degree, and it's a huge advantage for them because in their mind they're like, hey, this is just another transition and we're going to do it. And they love Humboldt County and they love the fact that their families are multi-generational or that they came here, you know, a certain time and they have property and they want to protect it. They want to protect their way of life, which is to live relatively freely in terms of space. Mm-hmm. Humboldt gives you a lot of room. It gives you an opportunity to feel like you're not penned down so much. And that mental sense of freedom is really pretty valuable. And I see a lot of these kids going at it, and they're the ones that are going at it in distribution, manufacturing, extraction, transportation. They're going at it any single way they can because they're not going to get left behind in this future that's coming, and they're not afraid, and they're not frozen as we're only this thing. Where a lot of us that spend a lot of time as cultivators, it took me a minute to make the transitions into what I do because I was a cultivator for so long, and it's hard to change who you are when you're happy with it.
Well, let's talk. Okay, so that's kids. Let's move a little bit older, say people in their 20s and 30s. What are they thinking at this point?
Well, I'm calling them kids. 20s and 30s is a kid to me. Yeah.
I agree with you. That's what I was thinking.
We call, 20s and 30s. If you're 9 and 10, you shouldn't be in the cannabis industry.
No, you should be in school. No.
You shouldn't be in any job. I mean, you should be going to school at 9 or 10. And so,
but kids that age are thinking, not 9 or 10, but by the time they get to middle school, high school, and, 17, 18, they're thinking about, right, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go?
But they're still at the place where they can free flow really easily. So I don't see them as having issues. I think it's the 20s and the 30s that are more the concern, and I see...
Well, tell me about them. What
20s well, that, and 30s. That's what I think we were just talking about. When we were talking kids, those are the people
those are the kids I was talking about. Yeah.
So you see them staying?
Yes.
Many, a lot of them.
I mean, some of them are running away to try to find opportunity in other places. It's just that for a lot of the people that are here their whole lives, they don't really realize sometimes just how good you have it here in terms of lifestyle in general. And so I know people that left and they're trying to come back.
Sure. Yeah. We hear, and, that's a frequent story.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people are realizing, hey, wait a second. And a lot of it is because at first, you think you're the only person that's going to do it and you're like, we're going to get wiped out as a region. But pretty soon you find other farmers that are going to fight it out. And then you find other individuals that are going to fight it out too. And pretty soon you have a little cadre of people who are all struggling together. And when you all struggle together, it builds a sense of unity. And that common struggle is what built the people of Southern Humboldt. The fact that they struggled to live here in a rough environment with very little support. And so that same lack of support created the community that thrived. This same situation, I think, is going to recreate a new community that'll thrive from people built in this.
Do you see what was kind of an informal cooperation among people, and so I'm turning into more of a on-paper cooperative among farmers, manufacturers down there?
Maybe. That's... there's people that are trying to put those together. But the problem with a lot of that is that, you got to be able to understand... Why do you join a trade group, and what do you lose when you join the trade group? And I think that right now you have people trying to form groups because it's a good time to gather people because they're nervous. And I think it's a good time for individuals to learn how to use their lawyers to look at contracts instead of defend them from legal stuff.
But would that be a good way to combat the big investment money from Silicon Valley and Canada that you were talking about earlier, where you were saying that some of the smaller farmers are going to have trouble with that?
A lot of smaller farmers are trying to band together in loose... I don't even know that they have like contracts or anything. Yeah. The smallest ones, they're just like, hey, we've known each other forever. I can trust you.
Right.
I handed over 100 pounds to you many, many times, and it came back with the cash. I can trust that you're going to try and work with me on this.
And we recommend that to everybody we talk to, that like look over the fence and reaffirm your relationship with your neighbor, because that's really who you've known for a long time, and that people that are coming into the business new that you're going to work with. A lot of these guys are fly-by-night girls in and out with your money, with your product, and you know, if you really want to understand what's taking place, go take a look at the Reconstruction period of the Civil War and find out what a carpetbagger was. And they came in with hopes and dreams and left with all your money in that carpet bag. And I think that the Sohan people just have to go back to saying, okay, we trust each other. How do we work together? Who has the ability to get a permit? Who doesn't? Who can assist with this process? How can we hire each other? How do you spread out the success so that enough people survive the transition? Because otherwise it's just every man for himself, and it's just it doesn't work. That's not how small communities survive. And I don't think you can band together to fight the investment money. It's not about fighting it. It's about allowing the group of individuals who, to me, really make Southern Humboldt special, which is the older individuals that did these small-scale cultivation. What they did is they created a really beautiful community. And it was so attractive to me. That's why I wanted to live there. I mean, I've been doing this. I've been doing cannabis forever. I didn't come to Humboldt to do cannabis. I did a lighthouse restoration. So it had nothing to do with cannabis brought me to Humboldt. It was purely a beautiful place. And then I realized Southern Humboldt was really interesting to me because you had such a really nice group of people who had built a killer community, and they treated each other nicely. And when you went to social activities, everybody was cool to each other. And it just tripped me out. I wasn't used to that in my life. And to me, that's like the best part of our region, is this beautiful, close-knit group of people who are forgiving with each other and accept each other for their flaws. And that's, you know, that's the basis of the whole place to me.
Well, it's still a story that's being told. And we'd love to have you guys back at some point to check in again on how things are going. And thank you very much for being here. Kim Kemp and Kevin Jodry. Also want to say thanks to Rob Homeland of the City of Eureka. Larry, did you learn anything in the last hour?
I learned a lot. The thing that struck me is kind of what you were just talking about, is one of those things that I had never really thought about before. But as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. So I was interested in learning that there is all this money coming up from Silicon Valley and down from Canada. It was just not something that I'd ever thought about before. But as I said, once you hear it, you're like, yeah, naturally it would.
From other countries, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and what? And other countries, too?
Yeah.
Like?
Besides Canada. There's certainly Eastern European money coming in.
Yeah.
There's money coming from Japan, I've heard.
Uh-huh. So more questions to ask as we move forward with this show. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted very soon at 941lounge.com, also at lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to say thanks again to those who make this show possible: Archaeological Research and Supply, The Humboldt Cure, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, and Papa and Barclay. Thank you very much. We will be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of every month. The next one will be March the 21st at 6 o'clock. See you next time.